Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
You gotta give us a shot.
You know what?
You gotta give us a shot.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Clapback Sports. I am your host, The Mage. As always, I'm joined by my co-host. Let's go to Murph today because Tino's busy right now. Murph, how are you?
I'm your number one again. I'm great. That's the best news I've had all week, Mage. I'm your number one again. What made you decide that?
Well, Tino was eating nuts, so that's why I went to you.
Oh, damn. I'm still chopped liver. I'm good, though, dude. Good. Victory Monday yesterday, and we're on to the bye week.
Well, you didn't quit the show this week, so that's progress.
Yeah, probably because we won, but yeah, correct.
Well,
usually, you're not getting on the correlation of that?
The correlation of us winning and you being in a good mood?
No. Well, that, yeah, absolutely, but also, like, that's the only weeks I want to do the show.
I don't know, Murph. You've quit so many times. I'm not even sure where we are anymore. Quit during the offseason. You quit during the regular season. Tino, how are you, Tino? Don't put those nuts in your mouth yet.
See, it took you that long. That was going to be my intro. It took you that long to make a nuts joke. You set Murph up, and you know what? Tip of the cap to him. You baited him, and he didn't take the bait. So look at that. Nice. Nuts were in my mouth. I'm doing good. The Giants won. I'm getting trolled on Twitter. It is what it is.
Yes, you are getting trolled on Twitter. You really are. For a guy that's never on it, you have been the point of contention as of late.
Yeah, it would seem that way. But
you don't know shit, dude. You don't know shit about defense.
Clearly. And the defense played great this week, so I can't wait to get into that. But happy to be back. Happy the Giants won. And, yes, we do go to the bye week, so way to carry momentum. In Giants fashion, we win a game and go to the bye week. So. Well,
look, Tino, if you have to take the brunt of the bad news or the trolls out there, then so be it. Because you know what? That actually means people are listening.
Yeah.
Which does. Is good because I was once told that we only had an audience of like five people. So.
Well, for the record, I wasn't really wrong. All I said was that if the defense played the way they did, Hunter Renfrow would tear us up, in essence. And he did. He didn't. I mean... I was just basically cautioning us, and you know, the Raiders are the Raiders. That's karma. The Raiders were karma. The Raiders were just the fact that they were still winning. They were in first place going into that game, and they were so bad in terms of everything aside from football that it was a matter of time. They deserved to lose.
Well, I want to stick with this troll here for a minute because I find it interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, the most interesting part was that he tagged all of us. And wanted to know why none of us have profile pictures.
What's his name again? Philip?
My Hello, face Phil. Is in my profile picture. I was Ron Burgundy for Halloween. It's just a really good mustache. That's all that is.
Touche.
I don't remember the guy's name, but he did go after him. I said to him that I thought it was a little weird that he wanted all of our pictures. And then we went back and forth. And then... turns out, I think his last message to me was, leave Murph alone. So it might be a Murph burner account, you know?
Yeah, I told you guys, I kind of rolled out of bed when you guys sent me the tweet and I saw it and I snapped. I actually think, you know what, it'd be better if I pulled it up. I think that's what it is. Please bear with me.
Well, I have to go back and find it because I believe he said to me he wanted to find out who the chunky guy was that's always yelling at Murph. That's why he wanted to look at our pictures, which I found a little weird. And then what was it? There was like something in there, Murph, that he put hashtag free Murph or something.
Yeah, because I guess he was just saying, yeah, you always shit on me.
He always shit on you. Seems like he likes you.
No, you do.
Oh,
that's what he was saying.
Yeah, I guess see if I could find it now, though, because it was absolutely. Oh, here we go. You had better responses to others in the past. It's okay, though. Giants win. Cheers. Hashtag Team Murph.
Team Murph, baby.
Yes, it is Philip. Philip from Twitter. That's Loretta.
The title of the episode, Team Murph.
Team Murph. Hashtag Team Murph. Look, the Chiefs ran 20 more plays than us and had the ball for 10 more minutes. And last week we were talking about how we are a time of possession team. And to me, that is not having a defense that helps a time of possession team. That's really bad. So I, as much as they played better and you showed that they're progressing, they're getting to the level we thought they were getting to. In no way did I trash our defense. All I said was it looked better than it actually was. But this week, however, was a good game. And it started with, you know, the X-Men obviously playing the best game. And that game that we talked about even the last couple of weeks of, you know, now that Jabril is down, when is he stepping up? When's he going to be there? And he showed up.
You do coach high school football. What side of ball do you coach, Dino?
I coach defense. I do coach linebackers, though, technically. So not the entire defense, but
entire defense. That might be a gift and a curse. Philip might be happy that you don't teach the entire defense, but I'm sure he's still disappointed that you're on the defensive side of the ball with your philosophies.
Yeah. But, you know, fortunately for us, I think if I had to sit down with Patrick Graham, we'd get along just fine. So that's the important thing. I think as much as Philip doesn't like talking shop on defense with me, I think Patty would enjoy it. I liked how he played man-to-man this week. Let's put it that way. I think he played man-to-man really well at times this week.
That's what I was going to ask you. How are you feeling about
before Patty? Before we get into that, let's take care of business. Make sure you follow us at @clapback_sports. Follow me at @themage_NFL. Follow Tino at @TinoRodriguez_ at the end. Philip, make sure you follow Tino, please. All right. And follow Murph at @GMenPain.
I changed it.
Well, thanks for the update. What is it now?
Murph714.
Murph714. Yeah, that should definitely throw Jack off. So he'll never find you now. So.
Yep.
So
I'm not in pain, man. It was Victory Monday yesterday, so.
So you're just gonna change your handle every week?
I kind of like.
I mean, if you guys want me to do that, I could certainly do that. Absolutely.
I think that might put you on Twitter's radar. It'd be like, sir, you have now changed your handle for the third time this week.
There's got to be a limit. There's got to be a limit.
I'm willing to take the limit.
I'm here for it, so.
I'm willing to push it.
All right, Murph, go ahead with your question.
To Tino? Yeah. How's Tino feeling about Patty G this week? I mean.
Yeah, so look, I mean, look, I did say last week he was disguising pressures better. We're still not getting any, you know, actual sacks out of it. We are getting pressures. We're not getting sacks. I think it'll come. We came up with a timely sack, but it was our only sack. And, you know, we're disguising coverages better. And look, I think the problem was he trusted his guys a little too much and deservingly so because of how talented we are defensively, man. Adoree was in the mess a couple times. Bradberry was playing really good. He has the last 2 weeks as well. Like, how do you not put those guys on island sometimes in, you know, unfavorable matchups to try to create pressure, which we desperately need? And it showed out this week. I mean, it worked this week. So I'm here for it. You know, when we can get on our guys, it works out. You know, it helps up front. Shout out Quincy Roche. You know, he was able to get pressure on the inside too, but I don't know, man. It's still scary to me that guys are just eating at us. We give up a lot of yards. So I like that we showed out. I think he mixed up schemes really well, but I think our mantra on defense, and I said it off air, but it's bend, don't break. But I just still don't think this is a team, and especially on the offense, this goes to the offense, that could hold a bend, don't break defense, that gives up a lot of points, because all it takes is some conversions in the red zone from the other team, and we're on the back burner really quickly. Like, we got lucky the last couple of weeks. So, good, but we give up a lot of yards. A lot better, we give up a lot of yards.
Let me transition there, because I'm going to throw this to Murph, because this is something that Murph has been talking about from the high heavens for the last couple of days. But you brought up about the bend, don't break defense. Currently, we all know where our red zone offense currently ranked, correct? So we know it's dead last in the league. The Giants' red zone defense is currently ranked 6th in the league. Very good. Very good. So the bend, don't break mentality is seemingly working. I also looked up a couple other stats real quick just to dive into it, just to prelude a little bit of what Murph's going to talk about here. Where is it? Cool. Here we are. So on third downs, the Giants have had 117 attempts, converted 46 of those for a third down conversion rate of 39.3%. Opponents, 38.1%. So the Giants are converting more third downs than they're giving up defensively. Fourth downs, Giants have attempted a 13, only converted six for 46.2%. Opponents, 15 attempts, 11 conversions, so 73.3%. Now, Giants are converting in the red zone only 44% of the time, 25 attempts, 11 red zone touchdowns. Opponents were holding them to 51.4%. 37 visits to the red zone, Tino. So this is what you're talking about. Bend, don't break, and they're not breaking. Or at least they haven't the last couple games.
Can I get that? 37 red zone. We've had 37 red zone trips against us, you're saying?
Correct. And only 19 conversions for 51.4% conversion rate.
Can you tell me how many times we've been in the red zone? I'm just curious. Just
25 red zone attempts, 11 conversions, 44%.
Yeah, that's drastically different, man.
So, and I'm going to allude to this because, Murph, you can go ahead and take this off, but the Giants are converting on third downs. The Giants are converting more third downs than their opponents by conversion rate. Not by much, but they are. So go ahead, Murph, with your...
I mean, I think you covered a lot of the topics, Mage, but I mean, in the reality of things is the Giants are getting opportunities. There's a lot of talk about Jason Garrett, Joe Judge, offensive playbook, Daniel Jones, this and that. But at the end of the day, like, as much as we don't like watching this and as much as we think it's boring and we don't agree with their situational play calling, the Giants are getting in position to win games and they're getting in position to score. But we're the king of kicking field goals. So, like, as crazy as it sounds, if we can turn these field goals into touchdowns, this team can win games. So this whole notion that, like, you're not going to win running the ball in the NFL and ground and pound scheme, punch you in the mouth for 60 minutes and control the field, as a fan, I totally agree. I hate it. I hate watching it. I don't think you can win like it. But the fact is, you can. And you look around the league and you say, well, most of the contending teams are pass-happy teams, right? But then you take a step back and you look at the other contenders that you might not necessarily think are going to the Super Bowl, but they're up there. The Browns and the Titans, man. I mean, they win games on the ground. The Browns just put up 34 points this weekend, and I'm pretty sure Baker only threw the ball like 15 times. So this whole notion that this boring, slow-paced, grinded-out football isn't going to work is, in my opinion, false. But there's a whole other side to this. Do we have the personnel, and why do we have the personnel that we have right now?
I second that. I like that. You're like, so – it's not that I necessarily have a problem with us doing it right now. It's just like, I feel like this isn't really what we expected coming in. So I just don't think we have the pieces to pull it off. Like, I just think we're shorthanding ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, we're right there. Like,
totally with you, man. They don't have the guys.
I think me, like, getting critical on the defense or, like, our just team as a whole is skewed because, like, yeah, we're winning games. It's just, like, just certain things – it just doesn't add up for winning football. Like, I'm all about running and controlling time of possession and pounding the ball. That's great. But, like, you can't justify what we saw on the receiving end. Like, there's a balance. It doesn't add up that arguably our best player offensively in terms of playmaking ability right now tried to attempt a pass, got a rush, and only saw one reception. Like, it's just, like, it's a weird spread, and it just – I don't know. Like, again, I get it. It's just, like, I feel like – there's a disconnect with this team. And, like, that's why we bang the table every week. Cause it's like,
totally with
me. Yeah.
Let me jump in here. So at first when Murph was talking about this philosophy, I'm just like, I'm shaking my head because I'm like, all right. So we've been giving Jason Garrett a whole lot of grief for a while, but what Murph is saying makes complete sense. Right. I mean, this is 1990s brand football. Right. Run the ball, control the clock. And that's not the way football is won nowadays, but not to say that it can't be won that way. So to Murr's point, he's right. Look at all the field goals that we've kicked. If we were to convert those red zone field goals into actual touchdowns, this might be a whole different team. This team could potentially be 6-3 heading into the bye, as opposed to 3-6. So what Murph is saying makes complete sense. But at the same time, then, guys, this really points to, like negligence on the front office and the Giants' part. You went out and you signed Kenny Golladay and you gave him a massive contract. And then you drafted Kadarius Toney in the first round. Everything, and they went out and got John Ross, Kyle Rudolph, all the off-season acquisitions that they made smelled like a Jason Garrett, Air Coryell offense. So to come out after putting all those pieces or putting your assets into those off-season acquisitions, it doesn't make sense why suddenly you're going to be a smash mouth football team. Now, the other thing about this is I don't think we're a very good smash mouth football team with Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley does not fit what this team wants to do. I don't think he's a very good north-south runner. And I'll give credit to Nick Filato. If you guys don't follow him or don't listen, check him out at Nick Filato, F-A-L-A-T-O. But he went through, I believe it was him, right, Murph, that did all his Devontae Booker snaps?
I think so, yeah.
So
it was him.
Devontae Booker really – what I saw from that is he has great running back vision, because as soon as his hole opened up and, you know, Corey Littleton filled the gap, he was already bouncing it to somewhere else. And it didn't – I think he lost yards on, what, maybe one carry? Saquon will lose yards on three consecutive carries because that's all he does is bounce. He's not decisiveness as – he lacks decisiveness as a north-south runner. Like, you got to see the hole and hit it. And Booker was able to break some, probably for longer than he should have, because he was able to see it, one jump cut, and then pick up another 3-4 yards. So that's what I love about Booker. I mean, right now, I know Murph's been saying that as well, but, hey, look, if Saquon has to come back and prove that he can be the catalyst that this team needs to churn through, otherwise Saquon could be gone, because I think our team looks better without him, to be honest.
But, you know, I'm also not even going to go ahead and rule him out. You know, just use him right. If Booker's going to be the guy that you want to thump with, fine. I'm cool with that. But make sure you get Saquon involved.
Well, let me ask Tino this question. With Saquon Barkley, it seems that this was more of a downfield passing attack. They lost Saquon Barkley last year. Wayne Gallman steps in. And then what do we see for a majority of years? Stick routes, curls, comebacks, yada, yada, yada. And now that's kind of what we're seeing. We're kind of seeing that lack of a downfield pass attack. Granted, Daniel Jones did have a touchdown to Evan Ingram, your boy. But we're not seeing that downfield pass attack. You alluded to the fact that Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney only combined for three passing attempts.
Yeah, so there's a few things to unpack there. So we're terrible in the red zone, but what would help with that is scoring outside the red zone like we did this week and, you know, taking deep shots downfield. So shout out to Evan Ingram for catching that deep ball. And you know what? I'll eat crow when I have to eat crow. So all good there. Happy for the guy. Nice catch. Other than that, though, however, not many deep ball threats or passes. So that was a longer 30. I don't think we had one longer than 14. By the looks of it, downfield. So that's not great in terms of moving the ball. But again, I get it. We want to thump, and that's fine. But, you know, to your point, when Saquon comes back, which, by the way, Murph, you were pissed because you were like, if Saquon doesn't come back and it's not COVID, I'm going to have a problem with it. I do remember that. And I was
And
I was like, he's not fucking playing because they're predictable as fuck. And he's coming back after the bye, which makes sense. I get it. Conservative.
No. Since you brought this up, I want to comment on this now. Right. I think Saquon would have played this week if he didn't get a false positive.
You think so? They're saying because of the lack of practice.
Because he missed two fucking practices.
But it's his ankle. What does he need? Well, the rehab, right? They said the rehab, him coming.
I mean, you know how Joe Judge is. Everything's ramping up. Like, he's Saquon, not going to let
Saquon's still on the sideline with the trainers right now, so I don't know if he would have played.
I don't know. I wasn't sure if he would have played. With the bye week, they've brought him back before. They've rushed people back before, so it's very likely. But
he played more games on a high ankle sprain than this.
We don't even need to get into that because, like, there's no reason he shouldn't have been on IR then. So that's a whole other story.
But either way, to what you guys said, yeah, none of the pieces add up in terms of as simple as fucking we go spend a first round pick and a ton of money on guys that are just going to catch slant routes. So that's mind boggling in itself.
And that's the biggest thing I think I struggle with is because, like, it's just such a, first of all, it's such a Giants move. Like, that's such a Giants move. Like, it's literally what they did with the defensive ends and JPP and OB. It's almost exact same, except we use them. But that's what frustrates me. Like, I can get over not using them. I can't get over going out and getting them and not using them. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if you, like, draft those guys and they're just, like, part of your farm system and whatever. But, like, we went and paid that man, and we literally – had a lot of other options on the board with Tony. Not that I don't want Tony, not saying that, but that's the biggest frustration to me because, like, I can handle the fact that I believe that they want to play ground pound football. Like, I can, I guess, half understand it, but I can't get over not featuring your guys that you invest in. Like, I can't get over it.
Go ahead, Tino. You had a couple points you wanted to make.
No, yeah, no, because it's frustrating as heck. Like, you know, Golly came back from an injury, and you expect to see more. You can't even gauge if he's still hobbled. I have no idea. He was in the game for a second, really.
Actually, that was.
I mean, he can't be happy either, man.
No way.
He can't be happy for signing up for this.
Look, $17.5 million makes people pretty happy. So,
but you, like, I get it, man. Like,
you know, that was my question to
gang, but
that was my question to Murph earlier, and I know you have other points that you didn't touch on yet, so I'll give you the floor if Murph will shut up. Sorry, Phil. But did they not target Galladay and did they not target Tony as much so that they weren't overusing him because of the most recent injury history with them?
I mean, yeah, I think the overall thing, though, and you were alluding to it, like last year when Saquon went down, it's like a lot of ground and pound football. To be honest, it's just it makes the offense a lot more dumbed down and you don't have to rely on your offensive line as much. I mean, like ideally you want to just run the ball like that because the schemes are just a lot easier and you don't have to count on these guys to protect Danny, who did have a fumble this game. You know what I mean? He really has like 2 seconds to throw. Best case scenario, Danny has 2 seconds to throw right now. It's hard to run an offense like that. So, you know, I don't know how the correlation from last year when we had healthy guys on offense to this year where obviously our offensive line's banged up. You know, I don't see that being, you know, 1A, 1B, but at the same time, it's similar in that they're dumbing down the offense. So that's why we're doing what we're doing right now. It could contribute that, you know, it doesn't play to Saquon's strengths. You could look at it from that too because he isn't a good inside runner. But yeah, like it's at the end of the day, it's excuses for not getting your guys the ball. Like that's what it is. Not that hard. We say that all the time on here. It's not that hard. Like there are ways to get Tony the ball instead of some bullshit pass attempt. Like I don't want that to be one of his touches. I'd rather it just be a now ball and just see if he can make a guy miss and gain 5 yards. Like he's that capable player. Tony's the guy who, if we're man to man, is going to make the guy in front of him miss. So why aren't we getting them the ball in those situations? Like, I don't know. If they want to pressure Danny, which most teams want to, there's man-to-man coverage on the field, and that's what Tony's great at. And Golly is good for that reason, too, because you get jump balls. But it went to Ingram this week. So, but still, you know, that's the thing. Like, we have guys to counteract how people want to play us, but we're not really taking advantage of it or utilizing it in the right way.
So did they not trust Danny?
I don't know why though. If that would be the case,
oh, I'm asking. I'm asking.
I don't know. We've said this before.
So I think the biggest thing here And the reason for the disconnect is I think the Giants have to I don't think that the Giants have to necessarily move on from Dave Gettleman. I think they're going to because it's going to appease the fan base. So I think Dave Gettleman retires at the end of the season. If I'm making any changes, I'm making one more change and get rid of Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett obviously has a different offensive philosophy from what Joe Judge wants to do. So bring somebody else in that has the same philosophy. One name that we threw out there last year who's tied to Joe Judge was Chad O'Shea. Well, there's already a person on this roster. Murph brought up two teams, the Titans and the Browns, that run a similar offense. You already got Freddie Kitchens on this team. And I heard Cole Banks on WFAN this week allude to the fact that they may have run the ball more because he thinks Freddie Kitchens actually had a say in the game plan this week.
Which you and I talked about that, Major. I thought that was super interesting because at first I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense because when Freddie was with the Browns and Baker was under center as a rookie, Baker was slinging the rock. So that doesn't line up. He doesn't like to run the ball. But then I started thinking about it, and Freddie is a running backs coach, I believe, by design before he was a head coach. And
so it was tight ends, but
I believe he was running backs for the Browns regardless. Now you threw me off, but it makes sense because if that's what he likes to do, I mean, look, Nick Chubb went off his rookie year too when Freddie was in Cleveland. So, I mean, there's no secret that he wants to run the ball, but I still like, I don't know.
Can I jump in with a conspiracy theory here? Cause you guys cracked my, You cracked my glass here because I thought it was interesting that when I saw the game ball video and Booker got it and they were all clowning him because obviously he's not the best public speaker and they wanted him to speak. Anyways, next to him, like right there is Freddie Kitchens. It's Joe Judge and then Freddie Kitchens right in the – like he says something to Booker. I'm going to go relook it up. But as you guys are saying this, I'm like talking to myself. I was like, I did think that was weird when I first saw it that Freddie was kind of – showing the love, he did a book. It's not out of the ordinary, right? Obviously, he's a part of the coaching staff, but like it would make sense to what you're saying. It kind of makes sense. But it's like, I think that's then even more to the disconnect. If Kitchens is involved, like whose offense is it then? You know what I mean? You can't, this is what I mean. The reason it seems like there's no fucking identity is because there's 1,000 identities. If you have two quarterbacks, right. You have none. If you have 1,000 offensive
philosophies in the kitchen,
yeah, what the fuck? You know,
and Murph overlooked. To answer your question, yeah, he was off again and on again, a running back coach and a tight ends coach throughout his whole career. So he was a tight ends coach with Dallas, Arizona, quarterbacks coach with Arizona too, and then a running backs coach with Cleveland before becoming the offensive coordinator. So
I'm looking for this video.
I mean, that's fine, but. That's still not going to appease the fan base. I mean, I'm okay with it because I understand what they're trying to do, but Freddie Kitchens taking over, if that's what you guys are insinuating.
I mean, Freddie Kitchens is right there. You see his head. I think he touches his hair. He comes into the huddle. He's right there. You could see it if you go to the Insta.
All right, so this is interesting, Murph. So
seems like he would be a guy who's celebrating him because he just gained 21 touches in a game. So, or maybe what is he at 24 touches? Sorry, Mish. Continue. Sorry.
No, it's okay. All right, I was reading. So in 2018, the Cleveland Browns had 574 pass attempts, 411 rushing attempts. So 2018 with Freddie Kitchens as the offensive coordinator, I believe. Well, actually, he took over for Todd Haley, right? And then let's see. Yeah, as a head coach, 539 pass attempts, 393 rushing attempts. Almost 2,000 yards both times on the ground, too. It's interesting.
Well, he runs more of a West Coast offense, I believe.
The Giants this year, 321 pass attempts, 220 rushing attempts.
But let's not
get the same ratio.
Let's not get this twisted. Those are the old Browns. That's not the scheme they run now.
Yeah, well, that would be Stefanski's.
Right. Which is what I think Judge, in my opinion, rather be. I'm not reading too much into it, a coordinator change, man, because to me, it's still going to be the same kind of offense.
See, but then
it's just going to be situational.
That's the part that I don't get, though. And I mean, I think that was a point that Tino was making, is that, I mean, what do you do with this personnel then?
I mean, you know what? This is kind of the argument I was making to Johnny earlier. Like, yes, you can say that we don't have the pieces to run this kind of offense, right? O-line's in shambles. We got a mega-million-dollar wide receiver. We got a speedster, first-round pick. We got Shep. We got Ingram. We got all this speed, but we want to run the ball on the ground. And we have no running back right now, right?
It's literally an air choreo offense.
Correct. That's exactly what it is. But it's really not far off thinking that, like, they thought that this personnel fit what they want to do from grinding it out. Stop it. Hold on. Give me a second. Look at our three linemen we lost. What all do they do the best? They're all run blockers.
They're all
maulers. Huh?
They all suck.
Okay, Mage, but like that's not the point. Yeah, like they really. The team didn't think they sucked.
Thank you, Tina.
I agree with you. Like, I agree with y'all. They suck, but like the team didn't think they sucked over the summer.
But
like,
here's the thing where I mean
the personnel
I saw the conversation fit. I saw the conversation between you and Johnny, and I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. I'm gonna ride this down the middle because I get what you're saying. I do, right? But at the same time, Shane Lemieux, I get it. He was better at run blocking than he was pass blocking. Who was it? Nick Gates is pretty much average on both. Will Hernandez is a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. I get all that. So it kind of fits running football, though. But not if your quarterback is getting sacked like he was last year. Because if then you become a one-dimensional team, which is exactly what happened to the Giants last year. You stack the box, defenses blitz, this, that, and the other thing. That was the whole point of adding playmakers that the Giants did this year, adding Kenny Galladay, adding Kadarius Toney, so that this way they couldn't stack the box. You had playmakers on the outside that you had to defend for. So if you're talking about having just road graders up front on the offensive line that are terrible in pass blocking, what's Danny going to have? 2 seconds every time he drops back to pass? You got to be good at both. I get that you're trying to make these pieces fit, but they just don't because it doesn't make sense.
I'm not making them fit. This is what they went into the season thinking.
No, you're trying to make the pieces fit.
They don't fit. I will be the first one to tell you that. But you look at it, and it kind of makes sense, man.
I'm not saying – right. So if Joe Judge wants to run a – sorry, I was looking at some Odell news. If you want to make this a ball control type of offense, there's ways to do that. But at the same time, I'm the old head here. I played old school football. I grew up in the 90s. I watched the Giants in the 90s. And I get the philosophy. It's built around ball control and good defense. And that's what Joe Judge wants to do. But you know what's also really good defense? If your offense could put up 21 points in the first quarter and stop the opponent from scoring. Because it forces the opposing teams to have to come back. And they're going to force to be mistakes against this defense. You could end up winning a game 42-10. That's what I would like to see the Giants do. I mean, if Xavier McKinney doesn't get that pick six, do we lose this game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying, Murph, and I agree with it to an extent in terms of the philosophy. And even to your point, if you take those field goals and convert them into touchdowns, you probably end up with more wins. But guys, we got to fucking do better than three targets for Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney. I was looking up, Kadarius Toney has the highest catch rate on this football team outside of Caden Smith, who always has a great catch rate, but he only has three receptions. But Kadarius Toney is the leading receiver in catch rate on this team, followed by Shep and none other than Tino's boy, Evan Ingram.
They don't throw the fucking ball.
But that's the thing, though, Murph. I mean, you have to.
Yeah. Like, that's where I think y'all are getting twisted. Like, I'm not advocating for this.
No, I get it. But more so than people being concerned about firing Gettleman, I'm more concerned about fixing this offense. I don't think the offense is that far off. I came on last week's episode. I said, hey, guys, we're right there. We're knocking on the door. We lost four games last year by 4 points or less. We lost three games this year by 3 points or less. It's a difference between being 3-6 and 6-3. So I get it. We're right there. We're knocking on the door. But something's got to change, though. So you can still be a ball control type of run first team while catching teams off balance on first down and trying to throw for 20, 30 yards downfield. The Giants came out and did it with Evan Ingram. Do it more. And then you can control the clock the rest of the way. If you can come out and put up a touchdown here, field goal here, two touchdowns, then you can control the rest of the clock. I just think there's got to be a better way and there's got to be a balance between it.
I agree. I don't know the answer though. That's the problem. Like, I don't know. I don't know what this team's going to do. We're winning games. We go into the bye. The Falcons are 4-4 in the 7th seed. So rattle the table, rattle the cages. We're not out of it. 7 seeds in sight. Yeah, man. Saquon's going to come back, right? Next time we play football, Saquon's going to be in the backfield. So I don't know. I don't know what team to expect against the Bucs. I really have no idea. Obviously, a team that you want to throw against, right? So I feel like we have to see it coming out of the bye. Like, that's the game we have to air it out. I think if we want to win that game, we have to air it out. It's kind of reverse Chiefs. Like, it's not even keeping up with them. It's just the way to attack them. It's the MO. Like, we have to take deep shots downfield, whether it's to Slayton, Ross, whoever the fuck, Golly, Ingram. Someone's got to go downfield, which should open things up for Toney. If Toney doesn't have at least fucking six targets against the Bucs, serious issues. I mean, serious issues.
And not only that, too, Tino. I mean, if you want to be an intermediate passing team, why aren't you using more slants with Kadarius Toney then? The guy can get yards after the catch.
I don't know the lack of RPO either, though, because if you look at what the Chiefs do, it's a very, like, maybe this ties into not trusting Danny, but it's not that complicated. You should have some pre-designed plays where Tony's in the slot and you could either give it, Danny could keep it, or he can get it out of his hands quick and get it over to Tariq, or Toney in this case. But we don't. We haven't really utilized it. There are easy ways. I said it last episode. Tariq Hill got two targets in the first three plays, both for first downs. By just nothing complicated, just throwing him the ball and letting him run. It was that simple. Like, I'm not saying that's winning football. What I'm saying is getting your playmakers the ball isn't that difficult. And it's an easy way to move the chains, and our offense needs that.
Not every pass has to be 40 yards downfield. I get that. But also, too, when they hit Kenny Golladay on this, I believe it was on an in route, wasn't it? It was an in route.
It was a slant.
Yeah. So they hit him on a slant route. And Danny has really good – he's really good at putting the ball where it needs to be. So you don't have to take shots that are 40 yards downfield. You can run a 5-yard slant route with Kadarius Toney and pick up 13. I just don't know why they don't run more of it. Why are they not doing that with John Ross? Why is John Ross not taking more shots deep then too? Like, spread the defense, do something. I think the Tampa Bay game is going to be real telling.
Yep. And I mean, by that point in time, we should have some clarity on if we're second place in the NFC East or not. We are, right? No, we're tied with Philly. we tied with Philly. But I do want to bring this up. So this goes into a talking point. Give me 2 seconds here. It won't take me very long. I want to talk about the Giants schedule. So you know me deep down inside, there is some fandom in me. I just want to walk you through. I don't know where I saw the statistic or what the percentage was, but long story short, the Giants have a very favorable schedule to end the season. And it's mostly games against the NFC East. And we knew this going in when we did our schedule preview. You know, we have a lot of big games at home down the stretch here. So the Bucs are our hardest game, right, on the road, but we will have that on Monday night, so an extra day of the week of preparation, and we have an extra week. So hardest game, maybe we pull it out, maybe we don't. After that, Eagles, Dolphins, Chargers, Cowboys, Eagles, Bears, Washington, right? Even if we double jerk off the Cowboys and say they beat us, and say we lose to either the Chargers or the Bucks, right? Say we just pull out an improbable win out of one of those. We have eight losses there. Say we win every other game, we're at 9-8. I mean, that's a 9-8 football team. You know, you can't go 500 anymore. So, I don't know, man. Like, if they wanted to go on a run, like, the Dolphins aren't good. The Eagles are not good, like, at all. And we see them twice. Washington at home to end the season is a fucking joke. I mean, and the Bears, dude, I watched the Monday night game last night. And shout out to John Mara. We forgot to fucking mention this at the top of the show. The taunting penalty is killing football.
It's killing it.
I mean, holy shit, dude. That was all-time bad. Yeah, it was a Hall of Fame bad. But I did want to say that watching the Bears reminded me of the Giants. Like, holy shit, undisciplined penalties, offsides out the ass, the taunting penalty, of course. But just the offense, running 5-yard routes when you got to get 8 type shit, like, it is, oh my God, it was painful. They kicked a field goal in the red zone twice. It was like, holy shit.
Also, what was up with the hip check from the the ref?
I know.
So stupid. Strange. Too.
Yeah. Brutal, but fuck him.
I was trying to look for that stat there, Tino. I saw it too. I believe, like,
yeah, the winning percentage for the opponents moving on.
Yeah, it was like the Giants' remaining schedule. It was like, I don't know, 28-39 or something was like a combined win-loss total for the remaining opponents.
Yeah, definitely favorable.
Can't remember where I saw it, but let's try and pull it up real quick. But
just know, not good is really what it is. Not good.
A lot of winnable games.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to be the guy to drink the juice, but, you know, here we are.
Got to beat Tampa.
Compete against Tampa. If we covered against Tampa, I'd have hope. It's what we did last year. This is literally what we did last year. I want you to know. And I yelled at you guys like 3 weeks ago. I was like, we're watching the same fucking season again. We're going to compete with Tampa, not win. We will cover. It'll be down to the wire on Monday night. It'll hold us along. And then we're going to fucking go on a run. And all of a sudden, like, literally what I just said to you, it's going to happen again. And
Danny's got to get a primetime win eventually, dude.
The Bucks, they are beatable. I know they're a good team. I'm not going to take anything away from them. Super Bowl champs, Brady looks good, MVP form, all that, all this, and that. But their defense is beatable. So let Danny ride. He's good in Tampa. Undefeated in Tampa. So 1-0.
That's true.
I'm going to use that stat for the next 2 weeks whenever someone talks about the Giants. Best game, too, arguably, right?
So Murph alluded to this as well, though. He talked about the Giants possibly not trusting Danny. What do you think, Tino? Do you think we've seen Danny Dime? I mean, I'm confused about where the Giants are with Danny, how they feel about him. Is he just a game manager to them? What is he truly capable of? What I say, if I was a coach, I'd go out there, I'd give him the plays and not tell him anything else and see what he does with it. But that's what preseason's for, which he barely played. So
you're asking me what I think he's capable of or what I think he is?
Yeah, what is Daniel Jones to the Giants?
I mean, shit, I don't know. I'm starting to try to figure that out myself. I really couldn't tell you. It's kind of mind-boggling because we say it every week. It's hot and cold. Like, 1 week they let him rip it, the next week they don't. 1 week he's running it, the next week he's not. Like, to me, it kind of fits like he's a quarterback. They're kind of fitting to their game plan, which is great. Like, that just shows how much of a Swiss Army knife Danny is, right? Like, he didn't play a bad game this week, but other than Ingram's throw, he didn't really do anything. I mean, we say this all the time. He's like, what? Like, how many times did he throw the ball? 20? Let me just look.
Probably. He's our head coach.
Yeah, he was 15 for 20.
15 for 20. Like, you know, but pedestrian, probably like barely over 100 yards, 110.
Yeah, it was like, I think 119, right? Or something like that.
Full rushing attempt, 17. Like, that's not a, like, what is that? It's not a day. He didn't really do much. His best drive was to open the game. And then it was like fucking 3.5 hours of Danny just receiving snaps and handing the ball off. So it's like, I don't know. That's why you have to assume it's a trust thing. No, because it's like, other than that. But then again, it's like, how can you say that if he's throwing go routes in man-to-man coverage to his fucking tight end to open the game, right? Like, I don't get that. That's what, like, that doesn't make sense. Why do you just pull back, right?
Game manager, bro. They want him to be a game manager.
But, like, they want him to be a game manager. This is what I mean. The Giants will take shots until they have to. The Giants.
That's right.
Like, they just, like, kind of. I don't know. I don't know. I don't even, like, I'm on to something, and I'm still not making sense of it.
If they saw Daniel Jones as just a game manager, you don't throw a go route to your tight end, especially of all people, to open the game. Tino's right.
Oh, you get up early and then you can manage the game the rest of the way.
But does that mean they want him to be a game? Like, is that saying that he's a game manager?
But still, or
like, I'm not saying he's a game manager, but I think that that's what the role of the quarterback is in this offense.
Yeah, but then again, though. But if he was just a game manager, you don't trust him to throw that pass.
Look at the Browns and the Titans, man.
I keep saying this, but
I mean, it makes fucking sense, dude. They have weapons too. They don't throw deep balls. They're not pushing the ball down the field all the time. It's okay to say that your quarterback's going to be a game manager. It's not ideal. I don't want to fucking see it. Danny has way more tools to just, like, be cocooned into a game manager. But, I mean, it only makes sense, dude. Every single week.
My biggest issue is I just have no idea, because now you fucked me all up this week with on terms of what this offensive philosophy is, because it's
But Mitch,
really pisses me off even more.
Let me ask you this.
If this is supposed to be their philosophy and they went out and fucking blew all their money.
When have you ever seen anything of their Cordell offense in the Joe Judge era? Ever?
See, but that's the thing that I think it's hard to judge the Air Cordell offense with what they had last year. But I feel like they took a lot of deep shots last year at Darius Slayton. No?
Didn't he only take like 17 or something? Because that was the knock. Danny was in second. He was the second deepest, most accurate deep passer in the league, but his attempts were like half of Mahomes. It was like 35 and 17 or some shit. Because that was the knock on him. It was like, well, he never throws it deep. And I agree, Slayton did see some deep balls, but I'm pretty sure Slayton saw every single deep ball. Maybe Ingram saw one or two. But, I mean, again, I haven't seen anything different from an offensive approach. Like, the only game I feel like our offense looked completely different from a play calling, personnel, and momentum standpoint was probably week two last year, or this year, week two against the Redskins. And half of that is because there was so much designed run for Danny. Other than that, when the hell have we ever tried to push it downfield consistently? Not in 2 years.
He wants us to continue that.
No, yeah. I know he wants to, because he's looking it up, and I appreciate that. But, like, if you think about it, for the last 2 years, all the games we played, I mean, when have we been aggressive? Name one time we've been aggressive. We weren't aggressive against Brady last year. We were aggressive on defense. Yeah. We were aggressive in the run game. But, like, I can't think of a game that Daniel, when we, what, like, we've been saying free Daniel or let Danny rip it for 2 years now.
Yeah.
Because Danny was ripping it before Jason Garrett and Joe Judge got here. So at some point, it's no longer Jason Garrett. And like, we're at that point, in my opinion.
No, yeah. No, and I'm all the way there too. I mean, I obviously haven't ripped Jason Garrett to pieces as like, a whole because, lately,
Jason Garrett sucks. Like, let's go on record and say it. Like, we agree with that. But like, at the end of the day, like, this is Joe's squad.
Yeah.
Joe's team.
It's the same. Once you hear the same story for 2 years now, going on 2 years now, it's a dead horse. And getting past the idea that Jason Garrett is anything but just kind of the head of this offense, but he's not the puppet master. Let's put it that way. He's not necessarily a puppet. He's at the head of the table, right? You can tell he's active during the game. He's doing something, but I don't think it's, you know what I mean? I don't think it's all him anymore. And it's been apparent with all the coaches that we've added over the last 2 years. So,
Murph, I got some bad news for you. You might want to cover your ears, but so to your point on deep ball passes last year, 20 yards or more, Daniel Jones had 43 attempts, 20 completions, PFF grade 95.6 with an NFL passer rating 132.4. All right.
So we took 40 deep shots in 16 games.
Yeah. So through 8 games, he's on target for less deep ball attempts this year than he was last year.
You don't know, but like, okay.
21.
I was wrong.
21 attempts, 8 completions, and PFF grade of 83.7 deep ball passing, NFL passer rank 85.9. So he has one drop on the deep balls. However, compared to last year, one thing that he is doing more than he was last year is those short to intermediate routes to 10 to 19 yards. This year, 69 attempts, 42 completions. So he's doing much better there with 700 yards passing. Let's see, compared to last year.
It's still less than three.
81 attempts last year on passes 10 to 19 yards. So, and he's already at 60-something this year. That's what they're targeting. That's that middle of the field. This is what I was talking about with Tino. This is where those slant routes and those combos come in with those in routes with Galladay or, you know, post routes. Like, that's what you want to run more of, especially with this offense this year. So it's not necessarily deep holes, 20 yards or more. And Justin Penick put together something today with the deep passes from the Raiders game. It didn't take, you know, 5 seconds to develop. There were some deep passes that were thrown with around 2 seconds. So you don't need 5 seconds to throw an intermediate pass.
We just take many attempts.
Nope. I didn't hear you, Tino.
I said that's a good point. Like, you don't need that much time. I mean, granted, it factors in, especially when you're getting all the pressure that – you know, Danny's getting. It definitely plays something to his psyche, maybe getting rid of the ball even earlier. Like, if Danny did have time, I don't think it'll change very much. I think he's still going to probably be in the habit of getting rid of the ball soon.
Just think about it this way, right? I mean, what is one NFL combine measurement that everybody gawks over?
Hands?
Well, that, but the 40 time, right?
Yeah.
So even if a person ran – so if there was a person that ran, let's say, a 4.940, what would we say? The guy's slow as shit, right, to be a wide receiver? But what people don't realize, right, if you're running a 4.940, it only takes you about 2.5 seconds to run half that. So, again, back to the point, you don't need 5 seconds to run a 20-yard route. You just don't. You don't need more than 2 seconds to run something past the sticks. I would like to see more route combinations with Kenny Galladay running a deeper slant route with Kenny with Kadarius Toney coming underneath with a drag or a shorter slant route over the middle. Let them do damage after the pass. You don't have to throw 20, 30-yard bombs every single time. Just throw it past the fucking sticks.
Which is a challenge in itself for us. That's easier said than done, unfortunately.
I mean, I don't know. Fuck you, Murph.
Come on, man.
Because now you got me fucking hating this offense again.
I mean, and I don't.
The problem is, I don't. The problem is, I don't know what the problem is.
You just got to be able to accept reality. This is our offense.
But it's not, though, Murph, because even you said it. Even you said it yourself. either the personnel doesn't fit or the philosophy doesn't fit the personnel. It both can't be true.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but I don't think either one of them are going away.
That's the thing that upsets me then, because then
I'm upset too.
I want Jason Garrett on them.
That's fine.
Give me somebody that can do more with the personnel that we have that aligns with the philosophy that Joe Judge wants. If that's Freddie Kitchens, then so be it. Give me more of those intermediate routes between 10 and 19 yards.
All right.
63 attempts so far this year for Danny. So he would be on pace. I mean, this is a 17-game season, so it's even more than that. But just quick math, that would be, what, 119 attempts on the intermediate versus 81 last year? So that tells me that's been more of an emphasis this year. So, you know, I mean, for people saying that we don't pass beyond the sticks, it certainly does tell a different story, too. Let me just look at short last year. So between 0 and 9, 247 attempts last year and 147 attempts this year. So
I also do want to note, though, we have very short drives. Like, I'm not – like, those are just attempts, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that doesn't count completions, and that also doesn't say how many times. Like,
well, I could give you the completion. So this year, between 0 and 9 – is completion percentage is 70.1. So 147 attempts, 103 completions. On the intermediate routes, 10 to 19, 69 attempts, 42 completions, 60.9%. Not bad for 700 yards intermediate with a yards per pass attempt, 10.1, and then 0 to 9.
The thing is, it's the groupings, and I think it's just hard based on that because of, I don't know. I don't know. Like that, I think that right there tells you how stats could kind of go either way. You know, like it does make it look way better. Like those aren't bad. The numbers you're reading are not bad. That bad.
No, they're not. Actually, I mean, it shows a little bit of a change in philosophy this year with those intermediate routes. Yeah, see, last year, the short routes, 247 attempts, 175 completions, 70.9. So he's about the same where he was last year. Intermediate routes, about the same, 59.3 completion percentage. And that was a bulk of their yardage last year. 730 yards on the intermediate, 1,428 yards on the short routes. I just want to see more intermediate stuff. Passes don't have to go for 20-plus yards every single time either. I'm okay with that.
We're just not going to get electric plays. And again, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it as long as the defense shows up the way it's been. I have no problem with it if we could have some excitement in our lives. Because, like, if we have no offense and we're, like, we're just running the ball, like, until, like, our eyes bleed, and then defensively we bend and then we don't break in that zone, like, That's brutal football to watch. That's pretty tough. The other team has the ball and has control a lot in that case. So, but onward and upward.
14 drops on short routes between 0 and 9 yards this year. And his average time to throw for all depths on the field, none of them's over 3. So, even with a bad offensive line.
Well, and that's the killer, man, is we haven't been able to see what we actually have. And that hurts the most. Not one snap fully healthy.
Let's see, what else? Last thing, do you guys want to talk on Quincy Roche and Adoree Jackson?
That's your love child.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, certain people have certainly loved it a lot more, but Quincy Roche was a guy that when I was doing a lot of my mock drafts that I had the Giants targeting later in the draft. So to be able to get Azeez Ojulari, who's having a really good rookie season, and then to have Quincy Roche, who took on 50 snaps the last two games and has shown that he deserves more snaps. Honestly, I feel really good about this team in this defense with the pass rush moving forward. We haven't even seen Ellison Smith on the field yet. Will they activate it from IR? Who knows if he does get to see the field. But Quincy Roche, really, man, he has shown that he can play. I mean, Ximenez who? Carter who? That's it, man. Give as much time as you can to Azeez Ojulari and Quincy Roche and let them go eat, man. Quincy Roche came up big, getting that fumble to secure the win for the New York Giants. So, I mean, he's just been an absolute stud. And the fact that the Giants got him or claimed him off of waivers is just – I mean, I forgot who said it today, Murph, but somebody said that the Steelers really dumped Quincy Roche for Melvin Ingram.
And then they traded Ingram, right?
I believe they did. Yeah. Or no, did they trade him? Mm-hmm. Or I know they were fielding offers, but you're right. He is on the Chiefs.
Wasn't Roach on another team before that too?
No. He was drafted or picked up by the Steelers and then waived. So really like this kid Quincy Roche. Hopefully between him and Azeez Ojulari, they have a formidable dual threat for years to come. That which leads to question then too. If I mean, it's only one season, but do you pass on a pass rusher for an offensive lineman if you got these two, or do you just try to secure the defensive line as well? That's okay. Don't worry about it. I'll talk to myself.
I would definitely prefer to continue to build that position.
The edge rushers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to have enough.
Problem is, I mean, I think we've seen this year, too, that the offensive line really needs help, too. I mean, Lindenbaum, you know, if he's available at one of our two picks, but then, I don't know. We really need help on the offensive line. I think I'd prefer to go after our offensive line, to be honest.
You got to go center.
I can't talk draft yet. You guys are crazy talking draft already.
Yeah, I'm just thinking because Quincy Roche, I mean, he's played really well. I just don't know if it's enough to pass on a pass rusher in the draft.
I don't think so either. But if Azeez continues to tick upwards, dude, there's never enough pass rush. We don't even like, even if we start to develop one, there's never enough pass rush, you know? So it's like when we took JPP, I remember people were like, oh, what? But, you know, never enough. There's never enough.
It's true. I mean, if we were to draft one, that could almost be the human urine tuck JPP.
Dude who comes in on third down. Nothing better than Fresh Legs, who's just a straight pass rusher on third downs.
And we're not even counting Leo in that pass rush either.
Yeah. So.
And Adoree Jackson quietly having a really good season. So I know that the stats are out there. His let me see. I can actually probably pull it up real quick too. So on the season, 45 tackles. He's been targeted 50 times. Allowed 31 receptions for a 62% reception rate. Only allowed 270 yards so far on the season. So not bad. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode of Clapback Sports. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Peace and love, everyone.